It's always an extraordinary pleasure to speak in this community to all of you. Both Padma and I have lived many, many, many years somewhere else. I often refer to Ananda Village as my childhood home. People sort of do the math and it doesn't quite work. But it's really so. Speaking personally, I feel like I just sort of held my breath and stood against the wall for the first 22 years of my life until I met Swamiji. It was sort of then, it was like, oh, this is it. This is what I've been looking for this whole time. And from that point to this, it's just been a continuous joy. I was talking to Swamiji in some context and mentioned to him this sort of lingering fear that I have because, you know, from the front end, 40 years looks like a long time. From this end, it doesn't look like very long at all. Time and space are very odd. And I sometimes become anxious that a certain level of clarity that I feel I've gained over these years will be lost to me if I have another body and it's all young and excited and really stupid again. And I asked Swamiji once, you know, just sort of, I tried to articulate the question in the best way. He gave a very interesting answer. He said, the kind of karma that, what binds you, he said, is when you look back on anything in your life with either longing or regret. Very interesting. He said, that's the karma that holds you, if you regret it or if you long for something. And I stopped and thought for a moment, and I said, well, sir, those first 10 years at Ananda Village were heaven on earth, and I would love to go back to those. He said, oh, that's different. That was just my childhood, spiritual childhood, and all the freedom of a child to just believe in everything and have the protective force of the Father and not quite have to take personal responsibility, but nonetheless just do and be and put out such wonderful energy just to get your feet on the ground. Now, I was, and your head in the clouds, I was realizing, and this is an obvious fact, but sometimes we have to stop and think about this. Swami Kriyananda was 22 when he met Master. Master died 3.5 years later. Swami was 25 years old at the time when his years of training, so to speak, were over. I mean, we tend to see him, you know, as a grown-up. Most of us came into his life. Jyotish is one of the earliest in 1966, but Swami was in his 40s. I met him in 69. He was a very dynamic, very powerful person. I saw just a little snippet of film, a video that Vijay took years ago, and it was just circulating. And it was nothing but Swamiji coming out of the seclusion retreat temple, bending over, picking up his own sandals, lifting one leg and putting his shoe on, which revealed this incredibly muscular thigh and all the balance and coordination of all of those things. And just everything about him had all that power that he had in his physical body as well as in his spirit in those years. But he was 25 when he was in the reality of, all right, everything that's going to be given to me directly through Master has been given. But never in all those years since has he ever even for an instant wavered from what was planted in him at that time. And the other aspect of that that we all have to think about, because various of us are getting older now, and we're hardly antiques, and Swami's been kind enough to say that we have aged gracefully, which is nice. You know, and age, as I said, is very much of an illusion. But there's a whole nother future of Ananda, a whole nother future, let's say it much more broadly, of Master's ray in the world. And just as Master planted ideas in the ether and inspiration in the hearts of his disciples and great responsibility on the shoulders of Swamiji, and then Master went away physically. He didn't go away at all. In his spirit, to those who think me near, I will be near. And that's something very profound to remember. And then Swamiji just took that ray, has taken that ray. And a number of years ago, he came with that thought to us, to think of this as a particular ray of the divine, It was many years ago when Swami brought that thought in. And it was such a perfect image for us to extricate ourselves, which we must extricate ourselves from eventually, from too personal an understanding of this. You know, Swamiji now, and we often comment, you know, he's one of the last living disciples of Master. And he's the last living disciple who is still readily accessible, who, I mean, all you have to do is drive up here or be in Europe or be in India, but you can still access this man. But he does look a little bit like the last living disciple. You know, the age has overcome him, and he has in many very specific ways. You know, whenever he has to move his body around, the limitation is there. As soon as he's not having to move his body around, the complete lack of limitation is there. All of the relationships that are based on proximity to that body are becoming more and more difficult to act out, just because he can't carry his body around, he can't be in the same kind of company he was, he can't bend over and pick up his own sandal and then with one leg just slip it onto his foot. It was so poignant to me just to see that little thing. But that, of course, happens to everyone. But when Master passed away, you know, was that the end of his consciousness? Was that the end of his mission? When it was impossible to be directly guided by him anymore? Well, self-evidently, we all know that's not so. And so Swamiji is now in this completely other phase of his life. And many of you coming to Ananda now, whether you're chronologically young or simply young in Ananda relative to 30 or 40 years, your karma is a different karma. And Swamiji faced in SRF the fact that he was considered to be just a youngster. And it was often handed back to him, well, you weren't with Master for all the years that we were with him, certain people would say to him. But that wasn't the right destiny for him. His destiny was first to have Master in the body and then to have Master as a ray of consciousness. In a very interesting way, Swamiji once remarked, he said, in many ways, it's easier for you who never knew Master in the body. That's not what we would naturally think. He said, because you were never faced with that confusion. He said that he had to work his way through. That on one hand he was dealing with the incarnation of God himself and an infinite consciousness, and on the other hand the man was dictating a letter and having dinner in the next room. And just always having to put those two realities together. Now, many of us now, you know, have had these experiences with Swamiji that we can talk to about, you know, dear and wonderful experiences. And it's not just the people sitting here, you know, many, many people. But that proximity to the physical body will have a few more years of it, but then it will become entirely a ray of consciousness. And it's not a question, and Swamiji's always been definite about this, you know, he's not going to become the new guru of this work. But there's a much more, really, more poignant and more exactly Swami Kriyananda way to do this. He has mentored us in discipleship. And more than that, he has exemplified it, and he can transmit to us exactly what it means to be a disciple, specifically a disciple of Master, but even more profoundly, in the autobiography of a yogi, the first sentence is, about India has always been, you know, the characteristic feature of Indian culture has been the search for eternal verities and the concomitant, and everyone always says guru-disciple relationship. But if you look at the book, it actually says disciple-guru relationship. Because the gurus are untouched. There's no reality for them. They enter this world entirely for our sake. So there has to first be a disciple before there is an experience of the guru. And the characteristic feature, really, of Master's work, if you think about it, it's very interesting in this respect. The entire autobiography, it's all about guru-disciple, isn't it? And Master's whole lila, his whole divine play in that book, is his longing for a guru, his finding a guru, his thinking that maybe Master Mahashaya is his guru, and it's all about the guru-disciple relationship. And then, who is it that takes up the banner after a mere 3.5 years? But someone who says, there's plenty of gurus, in this world. He said, what this world needs is examples of discipleship. So that through his, obviously through his example, but even more profoundly, because his example, yes, will live for a long time because he's spread that example out so massively. But even more than that, where his example lives is in his consciousness. And when we attune ourselves to him, you know, some people have felt this conflict, which is less of an issue now, but it's still in people's minds. Well, there was Master and there was Swami, and Swami says he's not the guru, and if Master's the guru, why should I attune to Swami? And if I attune to Swami, will Master be jealous? I mean, all these different, you know, and you get over it, but it's confusing. You know, one is incarnated, and we know that how he likes his coffee, and Master is this ray. But the way to resolve it is really so simple, is to listen to how Swamiji has put himself in front of us as a disciple. And yes, we aspire for God realization, but, you know, we're not sitting around, for the most part, hoping to be a guru, you know, as Master was, or an avatar. I mean, I don't think you'd sort of write on your life plan, you know, by 66, hope to be an avatar. You know, it just doesn't really work. But what we really want to be is we want to be disciples. Because if the guru is pleased, it matters not what the rest of the world thinks. And if the guru is displeased, it doesn't matter if the whole world praises you. This is Whispers, I believe it's number 24, my guru. It just doesn't matter. And what we've seen in Swamiji, in his vibration, and in every word he speaks whenever you ask him, you know, how do you want to be remembered? What is your greatest accomplishment? How do you see yourself? I just want to be a disciple. You know, when I die, the only question I want to ask myself is, have I been a good disciple? And when you start there, everything else follows. And all of Swamiji's, he often, for those of us who've been here for a while, and Jyotish comments about how he just took the same courses over and over from Swamiji because that's what he was teaching. And I realized when we all first came here, Swamiji taught almost all the classes. There was no other big crowd of anything. He did everything. He woke people up with the kirtan in the morning. He gave all the classes. He gave personal interviews in the afternoon. He told stories about Master at night. He did the next Sunday service. It was really, I mean, there were some of us around, but he was really the whole story. Wait just a second, I lost the thought. Let me find it again. Yes. And so he would teach Hong Sao over and over and over again. I mean, we must have, some of us, listened to 200 classes by Swamiji on Hong Sao. Never crossed our mind, oh, I've heard that before. I mean, it wasn't until many years later that I realized, gosh, he just gave the same class again and again. Because what you're absorbing from him is the consciousness of a disciple. In the way he would present himself, the vibrations he'd put forth, and this is what I wanted to say here. And he tells us, he's told us so many times, I haven't done anything. And then he'll come, and then he'll make a long list of all the things he's done. And then I wrote this book, and then I wrote that book, and then I went and did these lectures, and then we did this, and then we did this. And when you're not attuned to it, you just think, you really don't know what to do with it. You really don't. On one hand, he says he's done nothing, and then on the other hand, he's telling you how much he's done. But then he'll just casually say, well, I didn't do anything. I just attuned myself to Master. I just put my consciousness at the spiritual eye. Well, you, just put your consciousness at the spiritual eye. Just visualize Master and ask him to do it. That's what it means to be a disciple. And we imagine, you know, that he had all this time. You know, we think of him as 60 years disciple, in which, you know, Master drilled all these things into him. No, no. 3.5 years. Then he planted it in his heart. And above all, what he planted in his heart was the absolute commitment to be a disciple. And, oh, he was tested. I mean, you know, being expelled from SRF as he was, being left entirely on his own, being stranded in New York, being forbidden to contact really anyone that he knew, he was left completely by himself, and all he had was his discipleship to Master. When he wrote the Material Success and Happiness course, and I was sort of engaged in different pieces of trying to think how we might promote that, I thought, He was 36 years old when he was expelled from SRF. He was living in his in the back bedroom of his parents' house. He owned nothing. He had no friends. Everything that you see was created by his discipleship, because no one could take that away from him. And even the power of that spiritual test was that all those people he had relied upon in a very real sense to help define that discipleship for him, Self-Realization Fellowship and all his guru buys, all gone and all with their backs to him. But all he had was his discipleship. Now that is a consciousness worth tuning into. You know? Because if we can draw that spirit into ourselves, there's just no limit. And, I mean, even right now, I remember a girl who had come to Anand in the last few years, and every so often Swami would say, well, have you read, you know, The New Path? Have you read Awaken to Superconsciousness? Have you read A Place Called Ananda? Have you read Out of the Labyrinth? Have you read Hope for a Better World? Have you read? And finally she said, sir, it took you 40 years to write them. You know, there's just so much. Just to even begin to dive in, and she looked at some of us and said, and you had 40 years to read them. You know, you read them one at a time. You know, there is a limitless potential for where these teachings can go. And that's just the books he's written. There's all the different possibilities of the way Master's work can express in the world, and whether or not that work becomes diluted by individual vortices of energy, or whether every individual person adds to the radiance of the whole, and we really together, you know, create this new reality of self-realization, is entirely dependent on our individual discipleship. In the position that I find myself in, our Palo Alto community, where, you know, the traditions are newer and the number of people with the same experience that I've had are fewer. It's a very interesting practice because there are lots of good ideas of things you can do to make a work vibrant. But we always have to say to ourselves, you know, at this period of time, there are, what, 8 communities, and there are just a few urban centers on the West Coast, and everything we do becomes the definition of what Master's work is through Ananda for generations to come. So it always has to be this very impersonal question, not what do I like, what do I want, what would be very good, what would I enjoy, but we have to say, well, first we always say, what would Swamiji do? Because Swamiji is the easiest way for us to know what Master would do. I once said the obvious to him, sir, if you do it this way, that's because that's the way Master did it, isn't it? He said, of course. And I said, and if you say that isn't quite the right way, because that's not the way Master did it. And he said, of course. And he wasn't talking about every specific thing, because there's no model for a great deal of what we're doing. But it's not about the things, it's about the vibration of discipleship. And we have a specific destiny. You know, we're not just Master's disciples. We're Master's disciples through the great disciple of Swami Kriyananda. And the more we live in that reality, the more, and this is the irony of it, the more we become exactly who we personally were destined to be. It's the strangest blend of cooperation and individuality. I was reflecting on this thought in that our monastic vow is cooperative obedience, which is a phrase that was created for our monastic vow. Because self-realization has to be your personal responsibility. And what Master came to bring was to say no dogmas, no priests, no rituals, no magic mantras, but Kriya Yoga. The only place God can be experienced is in the human nervous system, which is to say your own consciousness. So we get this really powerful sense of I am God's channel and I feel Master's presence within me. And then he added the words Self-Realization Fellowship. And then he said communities. And then he said work together. And then he said environment is stronger than willpower. And then he said Master said whether your mind goes inward and upward to God or out into the world, depends to a large extent on the company you keep. So all of a sudden, our completely individual path is related to everybody else who's on this path. You know, it's a complete innovation. It's Dwapara Yuga, and it's really defined in cooperative obedience. We have to be obedient to truth. We have to recognize that, yes, God speaks directly to me, but gee, he might also speak directly to somebody else. And that person might then articulate it to me. But the cooperative is that free will, that it has to come from within me, but it has to be humbly carried out in cooperation with the divine truth that exists in us all. This has been Swamiji's extraordinary legacy, which is the articulation of Master's mission, and Ananda itself and all who touch it are part of that. And so let us be, as Swamiji has been, there's lots of gurus in this world, let us be good disciples, because we have the golden disciple in front of us who can show us, not only by the example, but by the inward attunement, by allowing ourselves to be guided by his inner understanding, to be in tune with Swamiji, you see, is to be in tune with the Master, because the disciple in his attunement becomes the clear window for that. God bless you.